It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Podcast in Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Trashcan, Cream Cheese Conradinho, also known as Jim, live from Qatar, alongside Charlie Chuckwagon, Zimmerman Davies, who is live from his chateau in the mountains, and of course, handsome Hollywood Heath Pierce, who's live from his five-acre ranch overlooking the Hollywood sign, because where else would he live? And because we're days away from our first World Cup game in over 8 years, we thought it would be appropriate to circle back with some previous guests from Iran and England, respectively, to see how they're feeling with the World Cup about to start. But first, let me get a temperature check from the guys. Heath, how are you feeling? It's getting close. Squeaky bum time.
It is. It very much is. But you know what's funny is we live in the depths of despair when there's gaps between matches. But anytime that the national team has been leading up to a match, I've tended to get that feeling of like, I don't know if it's Stockholm syndrome or what, but like I start to believe that everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be good. I start thinking about Tyler Adams' energy and flying into a challenge or tracking back one. I think about somebody good on the dribble and my mind just starts getting filled with all these things that I know this team is capable of that we haven't seen in long stretches. But I think this could be the coming out party for this national team and kicking off against a team that I think is beatable. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. And I kind of think, or I wonder if Wales thinks we're beatable as well. We're going to do a full on preview about that nation tomorrow and tomorrow's podcast. Chuck, how are you feeling though? Let's get a temperature check from you.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling optimistic, positive, confident. I think the more I think about it, this team is ready to go. There's no pressure on them. They're just hungry to go out and succeed and get this country excited about the sport. So I'm jumping on that bandwagon of just we're getting out of the group. We're destined for a big tournament and a lot of surprises. I think with the performances in terms of getting us out of the group and that those magical like watch parties where everyone's just going nuts. I just had that vision.
And I'm here for it. I'm all about this positivity and hopefully that our players and the soccer gods are listening so they can carry that onto the field. All right. Before we continue on with our talk about Group B overall, the U.S. men's national team, we got to bring on my favorite Iranian who lives in Scotland, Arya Alaverdi from Gol Bezan. You got to drop him a follow at GOLBEZAN for any updates about the Iranian national team. He has been doing some fantastic work. It's a great podcast, and we highly encourage everybody to check it out, especially leading up to the game. Maybe we can get some insights and send it over to Greg Berhalter. But we're going to bring on Arya right now to get some insight on what's happening with Iran, how he's feeling, because we had him on 5 or 6 months ago. And Arya, great to see you. And I think you were relatively confident that you could get a result not only against us, but potentially get out of the group. You have one of the oldest teams, if not the oldest team, at least in our group. It may be the whole tournament. And I think that experience will matter. And actually, the last time we spoke, Skocic was still your coach. And now you have an old familiar face in Carlos Queiroz. Let's start there. What do you think about the managerial change so close to a World Cup? And do you think that's going to improve your team's chances?
First of all, thanks again for bringing me back on the podcast. I really appreciate the good pleasure. It was, I think, a needed change to bring Carlos Queiroz back to this national team. You know, he was our coach in the last two World Cups. And, the previous coach, Skocic, he wasn't really doing the business for us in terms of performances. So it was time for a change. And obviously, it came a little bit late, as you mentioned, a few months to go to the World Cup. But we had two good friendly matches against Uruguay and Senegal. We performed really well, beat Uruguay 1-0, drew 1-1 against Senegal. We recently lost a friendly game against Tunisia, but that was everyone had like 45 minutes to play in that game. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I think the team is well prepared now and looking ready for the World Cup.
Hey, Ari, I got a question for you. And great to see you again, that handsome mug and that beautiful, beautiful accent you have. But obviously we've seen just turmoil around the world. And Iran as a country is going through a lot right now. Is there an increased pressure on the players? Do you think that's a motivating factor? Is there any, you know, it just seems like a very difficult time to be an Iranian national team player heading into a World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know you guys are very excited. I saw how excited you guys are. For us, Iranians, it's not as much as it maybe was 6 months ago, for example. You know, a lot has changed now. Of course, I'm sure you guys have been up to date with the news of the killing of Mahsa Amini. And then it's been, I think, over a month now since that has happened. And there's been a lot of protests around the world. There's going to be protests out in Qatar. People are upset with the players. You know, they haven't fully, in my opinion, shown the level of support for, let's say, the protest that we would have liked to have seen. Some of the players have, for sure. Not saying that for everyone. A few players that have maybe are either retired or living abroad. And I completely understand that, you know, yes, there's that they have, maybe they fear for their security, for their families. I understand that, but ultimately they are playing for this national team, for the country. So there is an expectation that they, with being celebrities, I mean, Iranian footballers are massive celebrities in the country. They have a level of responsibility to address wider issues, which we feel like they haven't done as much as maybe they should have done. So I'm interested to see how they do in the World Cup with this and what kind of support they show. With regards to the pressure, you know, as I said, they performed really well in their friendly matches that I was at in Vienna. They looked really good against Uruguay. So I don't know how much it's going to play into the footballing aspect. Carlos Queiroz is a guy who will prepare his team to do really well and defend and be very compact and not concede goals. So I think from the footballing aspect, I don't see it to be too much of a pressure, but I think for sure the players are under pressure outside of the pitch to show support.
Well, there's clearly a distraction and maybe inner turmoil in terms of the squad, because some guys want to be more, I think, vocal with supporting Iranians in general versus I'm going to be quiet. I don't want to take that risk. I don't want to put my family in jeopardy. Given that, how has your optimism changed? Because I know watching them play against Uruguay, and I think you yourself probably felt we have a really good chance to get out of this group if we play well. What's going to be the deciding factor heading into this first game? Are you putting all your hopes on one player, or is it a few players, or you know, how are you feeling? You know, how's your mood changed considering that there's a lot of factors that are bigger than the game, right? And sports can play a big role in activism. We've seen that in America throughout time. So how could this Iranian team potentially turn things around and start, you know, performing well so that the country can rally around this group?
And Aria, real quick on that, was there any big snubs as well, just for the wider U.S. audience? Was there any snubs or any players that were surprise omissions in the squad?
No, I wouldn't say there was any kind of big omissions. There were some players who were injured. Syed Manesh, who plays for Hull City, got an injury a couple months ago and he's still recovering. I wouldn't say there were any big snubs. No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, there were a couple of players like Zahedi, who plays in Hungarian football. He's, you know, a good player. I don't think he would have played for the national team. Other than that, no, not really. Maybe a couple of young players, but nothing major. To answer your question, though, Charlie, I think ultimately this first game against England is going to be a massive game for us, because, you know, it's the first game. It's the strongest team in the group. If we can perform well, then we go into that next game against Wales with, you know, a point, or, for example, you know, if we get a draw. But I think ultimately England are going to be favourites. So I think this team, from a footballing aspect, has to show a level of organisation, a level of, how do I say it? They need to be almost very stubborn with the way they play. You need to defend with a lot of, you know, forgetting about the attacking part of the game to some extent, and just being fully defensive unit for 90 minutes. And I think they will try to do that. Carlos Queiroz is that kind of coach where he will give away the attacking emphasis to make sure he doesn't concede goals. In terms of how they can get the fans back on their side, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of like a lose-lose situation, isn't it? The way it's going just now, whether they show some kind of support or solidarity during the national anthem, like we've seen with in the US with taking a knee with black players taking a knee, raising their fists, all these kind of things. I highly doubt they'll do that. They might not sing the national anthem. That's probably the biggest extent that they'll go. But we'll see. You know, I think it's gonna be a roller coaster for sure.
So Arya, tell us about Sardar Azmoun, who just got named to the team a few days ago. I know that he had a calf injury in October. 27-year-old plays for Bayer Leverkusen. With all due respect to Mehdi Taremi, I think Azmoun maybe is a little bit more dangerous, though. I really love Taremi. I think he's been fantastic for Porto and especially picks up his game in the Champions League in particular. Yeah. Both of those guys on the same team at the same time, it does give Queiroz and Iran legitimate threats going forward. But he has been critical of what's been happening with the government and these demonstrations being in support of the protests. And he's part of the team. What do you think that means? In some ways, I guess I'm trying to get to, because sometimes when a team does well in these types of events, it emboldens the whole country. Everybody comes together to support the team. And I wonder if they think, hey, if we can get to the round of 16 for the first time in our history, that will be enough to just potentially galvanize and get everybody together and try to find a solution to help progress some of the issues that people are fighting for. Or maybe do you think that there has to be an additional issue? I think this is a distraction for the team. I just wonder if it's going to be a distraction they turn into a positive, or if it's going to be something that holds them back.
Well, Sardar Azmoun has definitely been the most vocal out of all the players in this team. He had an injury leading up to the World Cup. He is fit now. He has been training with the team. He missed our last game against Tunisia. I think he'll be fine for the England game. He might not start, but I think Taremi has shown from an international, continentally in Champions League, he's been fantastic. He's playing really well. So I think he's going to be our kind of go-to guy in terms of creativity and scoring goals. But Azmoun, of course, is our target man. He's a striker, so he's going to be very important in the World Cup for sure. But I think overall, Osmond's being vocal and all these kind of things, he's always been a bit of a rebel anyway. He's always been one of those guys who doesn't listen to authority, doesn't take in people's telling him what to do. So I think, again, I'm looking for this team to perform well, of course. Whether that's going to mean that going forward it's going to be beneficial for the country, I mean, again, as I said, people in Iran are not really worried about football just now. So I don't know how much, although getting to the second round is a massive achievement for the national team, how much that's going to mean for the people of the country. Honestly, I would be very... I don't think that's going to mean much for them. If I'm being honest with you, I just don't think it's going to mean as much as maybe the players would like it to be. I just don't think that's going to be the case.
Interesting. Well, we'll obviously keep our eyes on it. We play you last in the group on November 29th. So we'll see where everybody stands and what we're fighting.
Just wear out England.
That particular
match. Wear them out.
Yeah, just wear out England and we'll wear out Wales for
just
you.
Beat them up.
Be friends in the last one. Listen, we both walk into that last game on 6 points and then we're just cruising about who gets first and who gets second. And then we can just be friends for the rest. Arya, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yes.
Again, everybody, follow GoalBezan, GOLBEZAN. On the Twitters to get all your information about the Iranian national team. Fantastic information all the way around. And the heart and soul of all that is Arya. Thank you, Arya, and good luck against England.
Guys, thanks so much. And all the best in the World Cup. But I just want to say, I really hope Iran do win all the games. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
Arya, everybody. All right. We got Arya off. And hey. I could have talked to him. I have a ton of more questions about Iran. But it's time to bring on James Benj. James Benj is part of the CBS Sports family. He's on a ton of podcasts, the House of Champions in particular.
Arsenal fan.
And he's going to come on and talk about the English national team, who have a plethora of good players. And so it's just a matter of, can Gareth Southgate get it right, James Benj? Can he start the right 11? Because if I remember, when he led England to the 2018 World Cup, It took a 91st minute winner from Harry Kane to beat Tunisia. So maybe they struggle. Maybe there's too much pressure on this. For whatever reason, I feel like England's a little bit more relaxed. And of course, it's great to see you, Benj. How are you doing?
It's good to be back, guys. It's good to be back to sow the good vibes about England and the bad vibes about the USMNT.
Oh, there's no bad vibes right now.
Hey, I do want to say before, you know,
give me 11 minutes.
You're a great guy, Benj. You're a great guy, but for the next month or so, you're pretty questionable in my book. You know, I just going to say you're pretty questionable.
8 days, isn't it, until you lot are out of the World Cup?
I
think with England, it maybe has helped that the last few months since Euro 2020 have sort of seen expectations trickle down. As you say, Jimmy, the best 11, I think he knows what his best 11 is. I think the problem is maybe that a lot of people don't like the idea of Harry Maguire at left centre back. I mean, to an extent, John Stones is fine. They don't like the back three.
Oh, it looks like...
And it may well be that starts against Iran.
Did we lose James?
No, he's here.
I'm still there.
Sorry, it was me. Yeah. Apologies.
Yeah, don't like the idea of playing a back three against teams they expect to beat. Those are and kind of often think that the team's a bit handbrakey, a bit slow and a bit underwhelming. But it wasn't Euro 2020. It was back three. It wasn't always the prettiest. It was at the World Cup. It kind of gets results. So I'm feeling very optimistic about England. Very optimistic indeed.
Is it the most optimistic you've been, or is it just sort of being a buildup? Because we're seeing... And it's not really a golden generation as much as it is a new foundation, what I think is for the future of kind of the reversing of the club over country era in England. But is this a peaking moment? Because at a certain point, the pressure is going to be on, right? They're so close. They're right there. Is this the one where it's sort of kind of do or die?
I mean, there's times on their side. It feels a bit like this could be the start of, you know, those early years of the Belgian national team. And suddenly those years go really quickly.
Right.
But I look at the sort of talent in attacking areas, you know, the Fodens, the Sakas, players of that, you know, Bellingham in particular. And this doesn't have to be, you know, this doesn't have to be the tournament where it all clicks. I think it could be. I think with a bit of luck in terms of the path, I mean, obviously I'm convinced England are going to top the group. But I think then if the rest of the tour breaks right, it could be quite an easy path, especially if Denmark do you a favor against France. So
you're building yourself a nice little easy pathway.
I've got it.
Senegal's going to be a walk in the park and France,
calling in the favors.
You know.
Yeah, calling in the favors.
Money's out. It's fine.
Easy peasy. Yeah, I feel great about it.
I'm glad you feel great because it set the bars high, the expectations are high. The fans of the U.S., most of them, they're optimistic, but I wouldn't say they're confident. For England, all the pressure's on England. There's that you get to the World Cup semifinals in 2018. You have a great Euros. Now coming into this one, the experience is there. The results heading into it haven't been there. I'd say, if anything, they've started to dip a little bit. Mm. So I guess normally you'd say, oh, we're going to use this as a positivity because our heads were in the clouds. So now we're set back to being a hungry, determined English team to finally bring the cup home. But I would say finishing first in this group, it's going to be a difficult road because I think Senegal, if they do get through and they have Sadio Mane back, that's a different Senegal team. You'd play France after that if they were able to beat Mexico or Poland, whoever would come out of Group C. Not easy. It is not easy. So if England do well, who is that player that has to be at his best for England to have this success that you're hoping for?
I mean, it's a bit of a boring and obvious answer, but I think it's probably Harry Kane, isn't it? I think that's what makes you optimistic about England. The way they play football is, you know, we'll keep the game to 5 shots for the opposition, 12 shots for us, but Harry Kane will take 3 or 4 of them and therefore we'll probably win. And that is the kind of difference. That's what happened at the World Cup. That's what happened a little bit at the Euros. And it's why, actually, as the tournament went on, England got better because Kane got fitter. He got in the groove. I mean, I think if you want England to be a bit better, if you really want them to take the steps forward, then it becomes about that Rice and Bellingham midfield. You know, when England play good teams, and actually, frankly, even if that, you know, when they're going to play US and Wales, they're going to need to have a little bit of guile, something that can break down midfielders and defenses that can keep the ball for extended periods and keep the pressure while they're doing that. It's not just constantly going backwards to the back three. Rice and Bellingham can do that.
Sorry, Benj. I actually wanted to get into just the back four while you're kind of talking about players and lines of the field. Because you say a back three, you only have one left back when they'll bench Ben Chilwell, right? So you just have Luke Shaw as an option, which I think, well, I mean, you're riding or dying with him at this point. Yep. You got center backs that not a lot of people are that excited about. You don't have Reece James. I mean, you're missing some key elements back there. Trent Alexander-Arnold's awesome going forward, terrible going defensively. Is that a concern for you that there are some vulnerabilities that Kyle Walker might not be 100% fit? I don't know. It seems like a concern, and I wonder about this team. Also, I kind of want you to get your thoughts before Heath asks the next question about who he would start next to Kane. Would it be Saka, Sterling, Foden, Mount, Grealish? I mean, who's your ideal starting 11?
So I would have Saka and Foden flanking Mount. I think then you get them both in their best positions, and Sterling has gone off the boil a little bit. With the defense, I mean, you're right. I think Trippier would probably function as the reserve left back in case of emergency. But and as great as he's been, as you know, Jimmy, for Newcastle, I'm not excited about moving him across the flank. I'm also worried about, you know, I was having this conversation with Mike Lahoud on House of Champions. I think we have to remember that we all say Man United make players look bad. So maybe we need to give Harry Maguire a little bit of a break. And remember how good he is on the left side of a back three for England when he's had minutes and had a run of games for the national team. So I'm optimistic, and I think Walker will be a huge loss. Losing Walker and James, that right flank looks so formidable with them. Ben White, who I think is going to be the one that comes in on the right of the back three, he will be absolutely fine. But like we were saying, if anything happens to Shaw, then you might lose Trippier from the right flank, and everything becomes a little bit unbalanced, even with Alexander-Arnold. So it's tight, and I think that's the area of the pitch that England are going to need some luck. But, that's the one spot I'm very nervous about. But I don't see anyone in the group other than Gareth Bale that I'm afraid will hurt that defence.
Well, as we know, Benji, there's no big tournament.
Did you forget to say Christian Pulisic? I didn't hear Pulisic in that. Yeah.
No, you didn't. No. Actually, Brendan Aronson's good.
He's saying he's good. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to throw my microphone right now. James Benj. There's no way that the England national team can roll out to any big tournament without there being some sort of bubbling controversies. So there has to be what is the press saying? What are the fractures that could exist? Is there any drama going into this World Cup with this team? It can't just be. It's just not possible that the England national team goes into a World Cup with no drama. Everybody's kind of holding hands, jumping in circles. What is the speculation, or what are the issues? Come on.
I mean, obviously you're right, Heath. And I mean, as we kind of had Jack Grealish at Euro 2020 as the cause celeb, the player that had to be played and that Southgate was wasting, I am certain we're going to get the same about James Maddison. If it's a gritty 1-0 or a 0-0 against Iran, people will be saying, where's Maddison? Why is he not playing? Especially if it's Maddison against the US. And I think that kind of reflects the bigger questions, which are about Southgate and the feeling that he is maybe holding this team back. I don't agree with it. I think he's a great leader for the team and for the country. You know, this England national team job, you know, it's a figurehead, kind of like being the King of England. And the next step down is being the manager of the English national team. And I think he is a source of divisiveness and division. Where he used to be, you know, as you guys remember, the one that they were serenading with those dreadful chants of football's coming home and Southgate make us whole again and all that. That, I think, is the challenge. Can he
kind of... Sounds like pressure. Sounds like pressure.
They have all the pressure.
If he can't recapture that mood, you've been on Twitter.com. It is a tough place to be after an England game or during an England game, almost as tough as watching an England game. So I think that's the real challenge, is Southgate has to get the fans back on side, because even from afar, they kind of make for this irresistible force that can really propel the team, but also it can make it hellish for England players.
Where will you be watching the games?
From behind my sofa.
You're not going anywhere to watch these games. You're focused.
Laser focused. I mean, also working. But I feel like, you know, for English people, there is an awful lot of stress. I mean, not least because every time I've come on this podcast, I've predicted they beat the US 3-0. Anytime I talk to a Welsh person. Yeah, I do. Honestly, I think the US are the team I'm least scared
of. You can't
come
on the show twice, Benj, and disrespect us like this.
There's not a player in that squad.
It's
going to
hurt if it goes the opposite way. That's all I'm saying.
And you have to get me on the pod if I...
We will.
Oh, don't worry. We'll have you on speed dial.
Dialing drunk dialing, whatever we need to do, Benj, to get you on. It's going to be amazing. Well, James Benj, we appreciate you so much. Thank you again for your time. I don't think it's going to be 3-0 England. We're hoping it's the opposite result. Keep up the good work on CBSSports.com. Drop him a follow on the Twitters as well at James Benj. And make sure you listen to House of Champions, the podcast, because he's got all the good stuff.
What a guy.
James Benj, everybody.
Top man.
Coming on our show and just spreading lies about how England's going to beat us 3-0. What a lovely, lovely chap he is. All right, we're going to take our first and only break of In Soccer We Trust. When we come back, we're going to do an overall Group B preview, so do not go anywhere.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Hello, everyone. It's Micah Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Welcome back to In Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Charlie Davies and Heath Pierce. And we are very excited because we are inching ever so close to the start of the World Cup. We got Qatar and Ecuador going first. Some breaking news did come. Sadio Mane is out for the World Cup. He's going to have to get some surgery. So I think that impacts Group A quite a bit, especially for his country, Senegal. Obviously heartbreaking for him to not be able to represent his country at the highest level after winning the Africa Cup of Nations and the African Player of the Year and basically being the guy for Senegal. So I'm curious to see how they're going to recover. Obviously, they've probably been planning since he got hurt with Bayern that they might need to have a different set of attacks. But I think it could be really low-scoring affairs with
them.
Don't
come at Jim. Hey, he's on the show from Qatar,
also,
man.
We can't be giving free advertising to American Auto Transport LLC if you're watching.
Yeah, somebody's coming at me. Jimmy looks like he needs more. I do. I've slept 3 hours in the last 36. And I'm just trying to adjust to the time change. I'm 11 hours from California time where I'm based. And
you're grinding.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. But, you know, I'm feeling great. I'm high on life, everybody. It's been fantastic. And and I absolutely love it. So let's talk about – what's up? What's up, Chuck?
I said you're in a dorm room. Like, give you some support. You know what I mean?
You know what? What's funny is that I was supposed to –
You should have packed a few crests, Jimmy, because you didn't pack any crests.
I didn't pack enough crests. My toothpaste is crests as well, so I'm like all in on crests right now. But I was supposed to initially stay on the kind of the South Bay of Doha. I'm actually in the – now we're in the hotel where kind of everybody is. And I have to have a roommate, though. And that roommate is none other than U.S. men's national team player Sasha Kljestan. He's right behind here, actually. I tried to turn it this way so I could be yelling away from him. He's dead asleep right now. He took some melatonin. He's out.
Okay.
Wow. But we'll get him on. We'll get him on at some point. He's going to, whether he wants to be on or not, he's going to come on the show and talk to
us. Man, they're honestly really putting you through it, huh? Roommates.
Yeah, you know what? Essentially, it's a dorm room, is where I was trying to go with this.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Did that
happen when you arrived after not sleeping for like a whole day? And they're like, hey, by the way,
and Sasha Kljestan, you know what?
You have a host family.
You have sliding doors. You have sheets.
You know what? It's fire festival over here. Okay. Yeah. All right. Just get off my back. But I'm looking forward to being in the streets. I'm trying to find a trash can for tomorrow night's show where we get a bigger review about Wales. Don't you worry. I'm working for it. It's very clean here. And hot during the day. Anyway, let's talk about Group B. And I just want to get you guys' thoughts. We've obviously been talking about this for many months since the draw came out. We knew who our opponents were. Charlie, I'll come to you first. You seem very positive in this particular episode of In Soccer We Trust. I think you and I are both noting how positive you are. That's nice. Usually, I guess yeah, you save your.
You did say England was going to give us a little beating, you know.
Yeah, I remember him saying that.
Maybe not those words, but I interpreted it.
Don't put words in my mouth here.
I interpreted it as a beating. You know what I mean? Like,
I said, we are better than Wales and Iran. We are better on paper, but that means nothing if they don't execute, if they don't carry out the tactics. And I think with Tim Ream starting against Wales, and Heath Gregory Pierce loved how Greg Berhalter mentioned, you know, players who are playing against opponents in the championship.
A year ago. That's what I'm talking about.
So Tim Ream, who's playing every week in the Premier League for a Fulham team that's done well this season.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me because he's in form and he's seen these players. And Wales don't have real threats in behind other than Daniel James, but it's pretty predictable with the way he plays. You can anticipate that. And I'm optimistic. I feel good about this group. I think, you know, in talking to a couple of the players, they feel the energy, everyone's upbeat, and I'm with them. I'm riding with them.
Okay. Now, is there anything that you've seen from any of the other countries that we're playing? We got Wales first, England second, Iran third. That has made you more confident, less confident, Chuck? I'll come back to you on this, and then I want to hear from you. What do you got?
I think with Wales, it's going to be very predictable. They're going to try and win the game off of dead balls. I think that plus the counterattack and transition sometimes, but ultimately off of dead balls. Defensively, super strong. We are so much better in the midfield than their midfield. Pound for pound, we are better. It's going to be one in the midfield. If we can control transition and tempo, we beat Wales. So I'm confident that our midfield gets the job done.
Do you think, Heath, I'll go to you now. I'm still pissed at Japan for laying the blueprint for kind of how to slow down our attack and to stifle
the midfield that Charlie's
talking about.
Yeah, but like I think that was I think it was Greg's attempt to look and say, hey, we're not in qualifying anymore. So the implications are different of trying to play out of the back in Honduras, right? In a game that you need. And we needed to be able to see, can this team actually play different? I don't think Greg actually knew, can we play with some risk? Can we play a little more open? We have we have some of the most technical players that this national team's ever had. Can we play through these things? And I think we were able to see under pressure, under a high press, right? If we decide we're going to come out, we're going to play out of goal kicks and things like that, and somebody goes, you know what? Let's collapse on everything, or let's bait and collapse. Let's have a really good trigger where we can press really well. Our team needs to be able to snap out of that and go, okay, it's not working. And that seemed more like an exercise and recognition that we don't have that than a way in which I think we're going to play. But I do like the idea, Jimmy, if some team's going to now come and overexpose themselves on us or overcommit, maybe we do play a little bit of that game of in behind them and have a little bit of a different look at them. Now, it's easy for me to say that, but we know in real time when you face 2, 3, 4 waves, a team can quickly put their foot on your throat and you start going like, man, it's going to be tough to get out of this for a while. So I'm painting a very pretty picture of what it could be, but I don't mind the Japan thing, though. I do think it showed maybe some teams that,
if we had not played that poorly against Japan, then maybe Tim Ream isn't in the team, right? Because it was clear that we needed a ball playing center back.
Wouldn't we be more predictable if we had just approached it the way that we've approached the last 20 games? In the case that I think we've ruled this out, so we're probably pretty predictable as it is. But having a few ways in which we can approach a team, I don't think we had, unless either of you guys thought we had a few ways to, you know, our big wins and big tournaments were grind and fight and discipline. They weren't necessarily a system of play that got us that.
All of our big wins were grinds. But I will say, especially Nations League final and Gold Cup final against Mexico. But the result...
Set piece goals, though, Chuck. Set piece goals.
Which is fine.
But we haven't been scoring those lately. I don't mind. Whatever, goals are goals. But that's usually a positive for us, and it hasn't been a net positive for us lately.
Mexico game at home in World Cup qualifying. And I would say our best performance as a group was the Mexico game away at Azteca.
Agreed.
And in a 0-0 draw, which we had the better chance where we should have came out with the victory, but guys didn't finish when they had that opportunity. That, to me, was about tactics and breaking down a team who likes to be on the ball and figuring out ways to do that. We were at our best for those moments in the game. So That's why I think this team has what it takes. I'm glad they got a whooping from Japan. I'm glad the game against Saudi Arabia was poor too, for two games to get this, get Greg Berhalter to start thinking a certain way, but also the team to say, hey,
yeah,
yes, you might have qualified for the World Cup and everyone's on the high and great. Back to square one. This mm-hmm. you have to play as a unit. It's not about individuals. And they didn't have some players available for those games.
Yeah, so, key ones, Yunus Musa, yeah. Anthony Robinson, mm-hmm.
and in particular. And Timo Weah. So let's do this.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be interesting to see. And I mentioned this on HQ before we did this show, that if you win the first game in the World Cup group stages, you have over 80% chance of getting into the knockout rounds. If you lose that first game, it drops down to right around 10% for you to get out of your group. So this Wales game, when you look at it through that lens, is incredibly important. Not that we didn't think it wasn't important, but man, that difference is quite staggering.
That's a big number.
It's staggering. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy, your experience in 2006, I mean, what was it like having to climb out of an opening game, like having to
very similar. We had our own hype going into it, and I'm glad we had Landon Donovan on this week because he referenced the 2006 World Cup and how 2002 he was playing carefree, 2006 he was feeling the pressure, the expectations, and I think that kind of wasn't just isolated to him. I think probably DeMarcus Beasley was feeling it too because he was carefree and a little bit younger in 2002, and now we not so we had everything to lose, but we didn't have as much to gain because everybody thought we were going to build upon that quarterfinal finish we had in 2002. And when we got slapped around by Czech Republic in down 2-0 at half, and they were excellent. I've talked about them before. One of the best national team performances I've ever seen up close and personal. After that game, Bruce Arena did something he never does, and he threw individual players under the bus, and he named Landon and DeMarcus. And it was so bad, and I think he felt so bad about it. I didn't know because, you know, I'm not in the press conference. We're just going through the mix zone and, you know, feeling sorry for ourselves in the bus. And then we get back and we have a special team meeting right after we land, and he brings us all in and he apologizes to Landon and Bees for those comments. And it just felt like something we're not settled. This just doesn't feel right. And we needed a response to kind of get everybody back on board, not only the players, but the fans and everybody supporting us. And that 1-1 result against Italy gave us a chance in that last game against Ghana, and the fine margins didn't go our way in that particular one. But after we lost that first game, you knew it was an uphill battle, and you could feel that the momentum was in everybody else's favor in that particular instance. And Italy beat Ghana, I believe, in their first game. So when you have teams with already 3 points and you're looking up, and those are two very good teams, if Czech Republic hadn't lost Jan Koller, the big 6'7" guy, 6'8" that used to play for Borussia Dortmund after 20 minutes in ours, I think they go on to get out of the group and it would have made it even harder for us. But it was, it's heartbreaking because all the preparation that goes into it. And in this particular World Cup, which I find interesting, is that we have 8 years of buildup, right? You have the anger of not qualifying for 18 now bottled up in us, even though these players didn't participate, and only DeAndre Yedlin's the only player that's going to be the carryover.
But that's why, by the way, Jimmy, that's why I think the pressure's off for these guys, because
you think?
The first pressure was to form their own group, form their own bond, get to the World Cup. The pressure was on qualifying, right?
Yeah.
I don't think the pressure was on anything else. Now I think this might be, and again, I'm really hedging here, but like this might be the time when this team plays wide open, because what's the expectation? It's not like we're not ranked too high. We're coming in sort of like as a beaten and battered, inexperienced, like almost underdog status. Also a little bit of this freedom I'm hoping these players tap into and just play with some of the swag we see these guys play with at the club level, as opposed to the pressures of what I think the timidness that we saw from World Cup matches.
I mean,
they got smacked in the last two games, so that probably helps.
That's true. Yeah, there's quite a few things that they're trying to overcome. Some are micro, some are macro. Yeah. But they just really need to have the swag that Charlie has on a daily basis, because if they have that and don't play timid, then are they going to give themselves a good chance. Oh. I do agree with you ultimately that qualifying was kind of the goal, to get that those 2018 shackles off. But I wonder if this team, to your point about being carefree, Heath, and Charlie, I want you to chime in on this. Now, obviously, the expectations for this group for 2026 are going to be insane and much different than how they're walking into this particular tournament. So maybe this is the time to be free, because that 2026 one is going to be a different beast altogether.
I want to know if the U.S. do well in this game against Wales, this initial first game, who is the player?
We're winning the World Cup.
That allows them to have the most success.
Heath?
Charlie, ask that question again.
If the U.S. are to have a great result, a 3 points, a win, in that first game against Wales, mm-hmm. who is the player that is central to that success? Who's the most important player in the match against Wales?
Weirdly, and maybe this is the wrong way because I feel like we're stacked the most with it, with attacking quality in our national team, but I still want to go with Matt Turner or a center back having to have the biggest game in terms of knowing when to hold the ball, when to pass the ball, when to lump the ball.
But against Wales, you think that's Turner?
I still think it's Turner that's going to have to make the big play. I mean, I don't see our national team going and, you know, in a way that Iran would, where they're going to sit really deep, or in a way that England can, where they can play a little more exposed because they've just got high quality players, even though we criticize their back four. I think the U.S. is going to have to make play after play. And we haven't seen a cohesive unit been built out of this. Now we have Ream and Jedi play together, but Ream and Robinson, Ream and Zimmerman,
Zimmerman.
Haven't had a connection point. We had Landon Donovan on, and we didn't even say the right back that we would have said, right? When we said Sergiño Dest, and he said DeAndre Yedlin because of the defensive liabilities. Like, it's a good problem to have, but a problem nonetheless that I think that we're going to have to make some big defensive plays. And I don't know. What do you think, Charlie?
For me, it's Tyler Adams. Because okay. In this match, we're talking about the midfield, because Sergiño Dest is going to bomb forward. Anthony Robbins is going to be bomb forward. Tyler Adams is responsible for covering those spaces, typically. And he's supposed to protect the back four. Second balls are going to be super important in this match. Setting the tone, I think Tyler Adams being able to win the ball, start transition, start those attacks, but also defensive cover. If he's disciplined and at his best, I think we win the game. And I think for me, that's why he's the most important player on the pitch against Wales.
Yeah, we're going to break down this Wales game in more detail tomorrow, but I will jump in and say that I hope that the Wales goalkeeper does a Rob Green and helps push a ball into the net so we can get a result against the Welsh and give us the 3 points. You need a little luck, I think, and you obviously create your own luck in a lot of different ways. So I just hope we play on the front foot and don't absorb, sit back too much. I'm obviously, we'll get into the weeds a little bit more tomorrow because there's a lot to break down as it pertains to this Welsh team and the fact that they have a substitute as their captain. I mean, the guy doesn't even start for his club team and he's the captain of the Wales national team. I mean, what are you going to do about that? You know? So, all right, let's pivot a little bit into this news that I think we have to discuss. Paxton Aaronson, it's official, is leaving the Philadelphia Union and joining Eintracht Frankfurt. So now that we have an Aaronson at Leeds and an Aaronson in the Bundesliga, I'm just kind of hoping that the Aaronson parents keep popping out the kids, man, because they're clearly got a factory going. I don't know if anybody else agrees with that.
It might be a bit late.
Maybe too late.
Well, I was going to say it's a bit too early to mention that. We're talking about the World Cup. You're going to bring in Paxton Aaronson?
To be fair.
No, you got to say bring him
Paxton
in.
Paxton Aaronson saying, like, going to Frankfurt, I think, is a big thing because speaking about the developmental models, he was a player that was underutilized all season long by the Philadelphia Union. And he was a player that took the matters into his own hands and said, I want to leave. I know Philadelphia Union develops players, but Jim Curtin went for the trophy this year. And even at times when they were up 4-5-0, they weren't playing the young guys, right? And I don't think they wanted to lose him. I don't think he wanted to go. But to be able to now be at that point where he wasn't playing and he can get a move that's going to be, I don't know, $3-4 million with a bunch of upsides, I think is a huge thing for our development. Just obviously a little bit short of getting him into the national team because he hasn't even been a consistent starter yet at the club level. So I hope that leap isn't too big.
Do you think he's trading on the family name a little bit because Brennan obviously got shot out of a cannon once he hit
the ground? Oh, yeah. 100%.
You guys brothers?
He doesn't get that move. He doesn't get that move if Brennan doesn't have success.
I don't know. You watch Paxton at the U-20s and you can see what's going on with him.
Heath,
a U-20 national team.
Let's be real though. He's not getting a move to Frankfurt in the Bundesliga if Brennan Aaronson has not had the success that he's had. Because if Paxton was playing for the Union and playing every game at that level, given the success he had at the under 20 qualifiers, you'd say, okay, that makes sense. But he's not playing in the first team. So how can you go from not playing in the first team in MLS and go to Frankfurt, a top team in the Bundesliga? There's no way that happens if Brennan Aaronson doesn't perform well And so I'm glad he's making the move because he does have potential and he is skilled, but it's not going to be an easy transition because we saw in MLS Cup final, he struggled coming in as a substitute. Yes, it's difficult. It's a difficult proposition to come into a MLS Cup final against LAFC, but he wasn't ready physically.
I thought he was busy.
Yeah, listen. All I'll say is that on the goal, on the throw-in that led to Gareth Bale's goal, Paxton Aaronson gets beat on he should defend infinitely better on a throw-in, and then they allow a cross from Cifuentes that shouldn't, or whoever, should never have gotten across because they couldn't defend a throw-in with, 2 minutes left before they were going to win their first ever MLS Cup? For me, it's unforgivable. But hopefully he learns from it and goes to Eintracht Frankfurt. Eintracht Frankfurt also.
That guy's an attacking midfielder.
I don't care, dude. You got to make a play. You got to recognize the situation and make a play.
That's okay,
don't trigger me on situational and spatial awareness.
Heath. Just because you're a striker.
Make a play.
Come on.
Yeah, but I'm not excusing it, but I'm just saying, come on.
You wouldn't say that on the pitch.
He's been in the Europa League final with Eintracht, and he's got to defend, dude. It's just like seeing out the game. That's all you ask him to do. Listen, I'm being super hard on him. I think he's an incredibly talented player, and I think his upside is incredible. His ceiling is super high, 19. And he's more talented than his pinky than I was in my whole body. But in that particular moment, it kind of triggered me that I don't know why he just didn't make the play and kind of see that one out. It's a goddamn throw-in. I'm excited for him. I'm excited for the Philadelphia Union. They continue to be one of the best academies and obvious teams in MLS, and I think that's going to continue for a while because they seem to be doing all the right things and investing the money in the right way. So long may that continue. All right, before we call it a show on this one, we want to give a shout-out again to Arya and James for coming on and giving us a temperature check on Iran and England, respectively. They both seem – I don't know. Arya seems like there might be a distraction there for Iran. By the time they play their third game, I think it's going to be pretty clear as to what they need to do in that one. I think their focus will be different for us when we roll up to that game on November 29th. As for England, it's clear that James Benge is carrying that stereotypical English arrogance. And I have plenty of time for it because that means we can play carefree and get after it. He's got everything to lose. We've got everything to gain. All right, final thought question. And Heath, I'm actually going to come to you first because I want Charlie to respond. And I'll go next. And then Charlie can tie it all in a nice little bun. Who would be the player on the U.S. men's national team to bust out the stanky leg if they scored? In somewhat of a homage to Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies.
I'm trying to think. I mean, as an homage, I'm trying to think who Charlie's closest friend is on there. I know he's in those WhatsApp chats with those guys and stuff. You know,
Zach Steffen.
How about just what player is going to have the best celebration? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A memorable celebration.
I mean, I would guess.
Well, I mean, I guess Pulisic would be mine with the gritty. I mean, he's at least kind of there's a little bit of, he's looking to do that type of stuff.
Was this question you asking yourself the question or you asking Gregory the question?
Well, I just cut off Gregory so I could go.
Jimmy's one of those tabloid journalists, he just wants to push the answer in your face, I just got to like what would you say? Would you say it'd be this guy? Because he'd do, no. But I agree with Jimmy. I'm like, I would say Pulisic just because he's the most, almost the most I could see. No, Weston, but I know he's got his signature, but his signature celebration.
Ooh, don't sleep on Reina.
Anthony Robinson did do the fake hamstring thing once.
Yeah, but don't
me out.
Don't sleep on Gio. Okay. Don't sleep on Gio.
You think Gio's got the stanky leg in him? I don't think
All I care is I don't care who scores. What their celebration is. I care about every other player clearing the bench. Every one of our players going nuts. That's what I want to see is that unity of that first goal where everybody goes, oh my gosh, it's happening. A little bit we scored in a World Cup.
Yeah.
And that type of feeling, even if it takes us to 1-1 in a match, that's what I want to see, that energy and that sort of, when you watch all the best teams, especially when there's young stars and whatever, the way that they come together around big moments of goals and things like that, you see, these are building blocks of hey, you guys like that feeling? Let's do more of these. And I think that can be something that takes you, without even knowing it, from being a 6 or a 7 as a team to another notch or two up where you go, oh man. And then that energy shifts and the belief changes, right? The pressure maybe comes off a little bit. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, no, I would love
Thanks for coming to my show, guys.
No, it's been great to be a guest on your show today.
I love that. For me.
I guess if you're going to celebrate and do that and you want everybody to be involved, you got to run to the corner flag where the guys can jump off the bench and make that happen. So hopefully they're all thinking the same things. So Charlie, give us, you know, you as the guy that really brought the stanky leg to life for the U.S. men's national team. I mean, you've thrown a couple names.
Hold on.
Greg Berhalter.
Before we go, I will say, if I see one more Charlie stanky leg celebration from Charlie on the internet in the next like 2 weeks,
I liked it on Instagram.
I did. It was a good one, Charlie. I like the camera angles that you were doing. Was it, I can't remember who it was for, but you know, no free ads. Yeah, but no, I'm just kidding.
I just want to see swagger. I just want to see an excitement. Yeah, same, I want to see some goal celebrations, right? Because that means they're scoring goals. So ultimately, you look at Gio Reyna, Brendan Aaronson, Yunus Musa, Christian Pulisic, and I'd love to see some goals from Jesus Ferreira, Haji Wright, Josh Sargent, whoever's playing. Just get that nine, if they can deliver. Whoever's playing that position. And I've heard Tim Weah might be a possibility there now. Finally.
Don't start.
I know. I don't want to push that button. But whoever's playing the nine, if they can deliver, that's going to be the game changer for this team. Because now they have somebody who can finish, and that'll take them over the top.
All right. Well, I hope that happens, and we're going to see it. But again, we're going to get into the Wales game more specifically. Tomorrow we'll break down all the players, our expected starting lineup. I'll try to get as much news as I can from here in Doha about what the U.S. men's national team is looking like. I'll try to put my ear to the ground and see what I can find for everybody, and also for Wales as well, to see what they're lining up with and what they're going to try to do. So we're going to get after it tomorrow. We appreciate your support today. So on behalf of producer Des, producer Alex, Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies, and Hollywood Heath Pierce, this is In Heath We Trust.
Charlie's got a blanket. Why is nobody referencing Charlie's blanket?
Well, I don't know I don't even know what it is. It's like he's wearing the Mexican national team over his shoulders. Yeah. It's a green blanket, and I don't know what's happening.
Oh, it's got a swoosh
right
on it. That's what he's doing. He's advertising.
He's got
again.
A swoosh. He's hashtag ad. There's no free ads here.
I'm in New England. Remember, it's cold here. I got the blanket. I'm ready.
We're moving over to In Charlie We Trust at this point. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening and watching. As always, we appreciate your support, and we will see you tomorrow. Later.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.